This morning we heard about Vidura's transcendental position, his secret identity. Yamaraj disguised as a Sudra, and so he spoke with that great strength and capacity. We discussed Maharaj Yudhisthira's satisfaction, at least the apparent reasons for his being satisfied in a worldly way, but at the same time the transcendental nature of Maharaj Yudhisthira, which meant that his happiness was not to be found in anything worldly, nor the absence of that was not a reason for his unhappiness. His happiness was in service. And the next verse is this, the theme verse for the chapter, or at least for sure for the message of Dhritarashtra. The necessity of spiritually awakening, and in that spiritual awakened state, seeing what the purpose of life is and addressing oneself to solving the problems of life. Prabhupada, I didn't discuss this morning, but it's part of the idea. Brahma-sokam, Brahma-sukam. And when that's absent, one is lulled into the illusion of thinking I'm perfectly powerful and happy and so on. The asura nature. So much I have under my control, so much money I've been able to give to my dependents. Now I'm well situated and my life is successful. When the real problems of life are imperceptibly taking away everything, the force of time. Any comfort of life or any material happiness which does not warrant an eternal life is but illusion for the eternal living being. One who understands this is factually learned, and such a learned person can sacrifice any amount of material happiness to achieve the desired goal known as Brahma-sukham. So, nivritti is the Bhagavatam message. Nivritti. The path of nivritti mark, progressively diminishing one's shelter, finding happiness in material things. Same very important theme, many verses, so like six verses in Kunti's prayers that are dedicated to this. Akinchana Vittaya. One cannot feelingly offer prayers to the Supreme Lord as long as one is thinking there's happiness to be found in material. Janma Aishvarya Shuta Shribir Edimana Madakpuman. One's mind becomes mad with such things. And in that state, one cannot feelingly take shelter of the Supreme Lord, call upon the Lord for shelter. The better the not just be a destitute person, urchin on the street, but whatever it is that one has, not because that certainly wasn't the position of Yudhisthira Maharaj, but not find happiness by taking shelter in those things. So that's only possible when, and so this is Bhagavad Dharma, the Nivritti Marg aspiration of a devotee of the Lord, taking shelter in the Lord alone. Mahatma Vidura knew all this, and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra saying, get out. Please get out of here immediately. At least he said please. Get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. What do you mean, fear? No, I don't have a fear. Cruel death cares for none, be he Dhritarashtra or even Maharaj Yudhisthira. So, if that's the case, then why is Maharaj Yudhisthira not afraid? He has shelter. Even he's a generation younger. Death is still approaching. And youthful vitality is being taken and so many things. But there's no fear because there's shelter. But one who has happiness in false shelters has fear because those false shelters will be... whether they're taken gradually or abruptly. Someone was just writing to me that they had, it's a devotee, so they had their hopes for years together that by advancement in science, the quality of life can be better and so forth and so on. And they, you know, then they came in contact with Krishna consciousness and they started hearing Prabhupada's words. But, you know, they still had faith in this, the science. They had, but the reality of the situation of what science cannot do to help his mother and father, both of whom have this and that situation. And they're in incredible pain, and they can hardly even move around. And doesn't have that faith that he had in his youthful zeal had towards improving the quality of life. Because the grip of time doesn't yield. It's invincible. Krishna's energy moves. So, the foolish person will see, but not see. Pashyati, na pashyati. And it's very difficult to help those that don't see the obvious. It means they choose not to. it's more difficult to wake up a person who's pretending to be asleep than a person who's sleeping. We may even have our experience trying to wake somebody who's pretending to be asleep, who's choosing, I don't want to get up. So the lessons are there for all of us. However, as this message was there for everyone, Prabhupada's indication is it was especially meant for Dhritarashtra. Now, part of the reason for commenting like that is that these talks in general, the Mahabharata rendering is that these talks took place in the company of everyone. Obviously, the punchline of this could not have taken part in the presence of everyone, because he says, don't disclose this to anyone, leave at once. So the Bhagavatam picture is slightly different, that there was general talks that include some of these messages, but there were times when the two brothers, the two uncles, would be off together, and that would be natural. And then Vidura would really work him over in those more intimate, confidential moments. So the message of transcendence applies for everyone. It's urgent in the case of persons that are choosing to not get it. And especially in Dhritarashtra's case, where he's at an age where it's almost it, as we're going to hear. Whoever is under the influence of supreme kala, eternal time, must surrender his most dear life. I want to speak of other things, such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Now, it's not the persons don't like to admit that. What is the most wonderful thing? Yaksha asked Maharaj Yudhisthira, that everyone is thinking, I will not have to die. Everyone else is dying, but I will not have to die. It's not like, not necessarily like just defying death, but just somehow in the back of the mind, just not accepting it. It's not truly addressing it and accepting it. It's going to happen. Most wonderful thing. So here he's letting him know that this most wonderful thing is going to happen to everyone, and it's going to happen to you. Woo, woo, woo. Your father, brother, well-wishers. Now, father in this case brother Pandu, Santanu Pandu, your well-wishers, all the persons that were in the Kurukshetra battle that were killed, your sons, everyone before you and all after you, they're gone. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. Very precarious. You're still in denial. You're still thinking, I'm king, I'm the ruler. But who is the master? one who is bidding, Prabhupada explains this, I don't know if it's here, one who is bidding will be done. I choose to remain forever. That's not going to happen. So no one is the king. Such ideas of being king, it's illusion. But you're thinking, king. Vidura wanted to point out to Dhritarashtra that everyone has to protect himself by his action and by the grace of the Lord. So, not by material arrangements. By his action, the protection is shelter taking. And then the reciprocation on the other side of that shelter taking is acceptance, or giving one shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. One has to execute his duty faithfully, depending for the result on the supreme authority. That's our lifetime's work. Execute our duties faithfully, depend upon the result unto the Supreme Lord for that result, and then the ultimate issue, the ultimate result, that the Lord will receive us and take us out of this unfortunate circumstance. Because if that descending mercy doesn't come, we remain and we don't have a choice. I went out of here, I'm sorry. You've got a long sentence. But I've been good. Yeah, and you've also been very bad. So you've got a long sentence. So it's amnesty is dependent upon the Lord. And the circumstances that we encounter, that's dependent upon the Lord. And it's not whimsical. It's according to laws that he's established. And so one has to abide by those laws. Without resentment, abide by the order of the Lord with great happiness and acceptance. He's the controller. We're the controlled. We're the servant. That's our position. Joyfully accepting the position of the servant. And that's our spiritual happiness. No friend, no children, no father, no brother, no state. No one else can protect a person who is not protected by the Supreme Lord. One should, therefore, seek the protection of the Supreme Lord. For the human form of life is meant for seeking that protection. Dhritarashtra was warned of his precarious condition more and more by the following words. It gets really heavy. Can you just imagine the scene? You have been blind from your very birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened. Your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose. Your liver is defective. And you're coughing up mucus. Do you hear the knock on the door? These are signs of death approaching. Dhritarashtra, you must do something. Life is the preparation for that moment, and you've not prepared yourself. With blindness, as Prabhupada indicates, not only materially blind, spiritually blind. You're such an elevated person, but you've held on fastidiously to this attachment of being the king. Well, this is coming up next. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Verily, you're living just like a household dog. Think you're the king. Dog. This is his brother. His dear advisor, whose counsel Dhritarashtra very much cherished, whose wisdom everyone understood. You're living like a household dog. So like, you know, in someone else's house, you can't keep yourself. You're being kept like a dog, wagging your tail and eating the remnants of the food given by Bhima. He who was destroyed in battle, your 100 sons. And when there's something left on his plate, he tosses it and you wag your tail. Have you no sense of your position? Have you no shame? But they're because the Pandavas are treating him like father with utmost respect, just so that, because it was their duty to do so, but also so that Dhritarashtra would not feel the pain of the loss of his 100 sons by the very people who were maintaining him. To see how gracious was and how effective was Maharaj Yudhisthira's cultured way of dealing with his uncle. His uncle vicariously was living as if through his own sons who were gone. So we've already heard this, but while what Dhritarashtra was doing was right, it was the gracious thing to do, for Dhritarashtra to accept it was the wrong thing to do. Because in accepting, he was not taking those steps which are necessary to prepare to meet his final moment, which was fast approaching. The psychology is that when he was young and he was blind, he wished very intensely to be the king. But he was not able to be the king, and there's nothing he can do about his blindness. So it was a desire that was never to be fulfilled. At least through his own sons, he could live as the king. Well, then before his sons were born, if through marriage his son was born first, that didn't happen. Then if through his sons they could rule, and then he could rule through them, that he could be somewhat satisfied or largely satisfied. But to do that, so many nefarious ways, so his religious principles were compromised, severely compromised. In the midst of a royal family, that the religious principle was the emblem of what they stood for. So he knew he was wrong, and his chief friend was Vidura was telling him over and over again, "Stop this." And Vidura would do it openly, right in front of Duryodhan, besides confidentially. There's one passage in Mahabharata where Vidura was at it all night long, privately, with Dhritarashtra. But he just couldn't break his determination, his will to continue with this diabolical, irreligious thing, and just holding it. Why? Holding on to attachment. So Vidura was feeling, I just don't have what it takes to do this. What can I do? What can I do? And as he was considering what to do, the thought came to his mind of one sage, whose name I can't remember, but the sage said, "You've pleased me very much," because Vidura was inclined to associate with saintly people, being the saintly person that he was. Go wash. So the sage said, "You've pleased me so much by your company," something very much like what Vyasadeva had said to his mother. Who was Vyasadeva's mother? Satyavati. So when Vyasadeva was born, as Parashara had indicated would happen, shortly after he was born, he was in this mature Vyasadeva form. And he told his mother, "You just call, remember me and call my name, and I'll at once be there. And whatever you desire, I will fulfill that." So this is when Satyavati called. She called, based on that benediction, Satyavati called Vyas to come and perform the service of conceiving the children in the wives of Vichitravirya that survived him. So similarly, in any case, Vidura had this benediction from one sage. I can't remember his name. Starts with an S. And he came, and then he took up where Vidura left off. Dhritarashtra, being the noble person that he was, his first question to the sage was, "What is my duty in life, and how should I fulfill it?" He knew the right questions to ask. He just couldn't follow it. He couldn't follow it because he was attached. It was hopeless. Dhritarashtra was a noble person who was hopelessly bound by his attachments. He couldn't get it by hearing. He couldn't get it by seeing. And for this reason, Vidura came back, because now he was like Super Vidura. Wasn't just wise, he was a pure devotee. And for that reason, knowing the extent of the attachment of Dhritarashtra, he spoke very strongly. Very strongly. Because very strong cuts of the sword of knowledge was needed to cut Dhritarashtra from his attachments. But he knew that Dhritarashtra would take it from him, and he gave it very strongly. Have you no shame? Have you, you're a Kshatriya? Have you no honor? Eating scraps off of the plate of Bhima. Mahabharata describes that all the Pandavas except for Bhima would go out of their way, and Draupadi too, go out of their way to. Even Draupadi was in that situation where she was insulted, but they went out of their way to have Dhritarashtra have no anxiety and Gandhari no anxiety, except Bhima. Dhritarashtra would be seated on his big throne, and Bhima would come by deliberately loud enough so that Dhritarashtra could hear, slap his arms and say, "With these arms I destroy the sons of Dhritarashtra because of their wicked deeds. They've been sent to the abode of Yamaraj," and things like that. Because he resented the fact that Dhritarashtra allowed them. He could have checked them at any step. At least, you know, without the further wickedness of, like Kamsa, imprisoning his father. Bhima felt that Dhritarashtra was an accomplice in all these deeds, because he could have, by his silence or by his acknowledged looking the other way, he was part of the wickedness of Duryodhan. But Dhritarashtra said nothing, because if Dhritarashtra could have gone to Yudhisthira and said, "Hey, you know, check your brother," and Yudhisthira would have, but he didn't say anything. And Gandhari didn't say anything either, because Gandhari knew that he was right. And she knew that her husband was attached, and he didn't want to disturb her husband. So it's that they were in this compromised situation, eating scraps off of the plate of Bhima like a dog. King. Vidura not only knew the intrigues, but he knew the psychology of his brother. He knew the higher nature of his brother. Now, there in this situation, Duryodhan is no longer there to come back and feed poison to his father, turn his father against Vidura and neutralize Vidura's words and feed his weakness and let him know that if the Pandavas are still around, then I won't be able to live, and then where will you be? That was also part of what was going on. Dhritarashtra would not have tolerated hearing Vidura speak the way that Vidura spoke to him before if there wasn't a higher nature. In other words, one has to be careful about giving these kinds of instructions. You give these kinds of instructions to persons who can receive them. Try to give these kind give instructions to an envious person. You just feed their enmity. But so Vidura knew his audience very well. There is no need to live a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poison. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. Now, we just heard a little list of, according to Dharma, according to the laws of Manu, who is fit for punishment with death. One who steals the property of another, one who puts one's wife, attacks one's wife, one who attacks with a deadly weapon. Right? These are reasons for the death penalty without any repercussion. This is Dharma. And you've been involved in all these death penalty kinds of things. And why did you do these things? Because you're attached. Dhritarashtra, understand your situation. I mean, you're thinking, Prabhupada writes, he was thinking he had no alternative. How will I maintain myself otherwise? He's part of the royal family. What's he to do? What he's to do is to leave the royal palace and live in that state of detachment. Great kings had done that before him at a much different age. But Dhritarashtra was unable to do that. Well, I'm blind. So, you got a wife, she has eyes. Go to the forest. I'll go with you. This is the thing. People hold on to their material circumstance. And again, the thought, oh, I'll do it later. It's a foolish idea. It's not the Vedic conception. It's a foolish conception. Do it later. Is it likely that one can do it later when the course of one's life, one has no spiritual shelter? And if one has spiritual shelter, is it not going to be that progressively one is going to diminish those false shelters? I'll do it later. Consciousness. Later never comes. Opportunity always comes, but the doing never comes. One maintains attachment. Foolish thing. That it comes later if one has cultivated it earlier. As I travel, I have opportunity to see these situations where the parents are staying with their children. And, of course, devotee association makes a huge difference if the parents take to Krishna consciousness or not. But in many cases, it's very difficult for them. They appreciate that their children are caring for them and leading a religious life, but in many cases, they can't do it. And just putter around doing other things. Waiting for death to take them. How powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. So the task of the sadhu is to bring that message. The way that Vidura has chosen to bring this message is appropriate for his audience. And just to speak this way to others, you have to adjust the message to the audience. That's what I'm trying to say. How Vidura would address Yudhisthira would certainly be very different. Although the message need not change. This was like major surgery. Dhritarashtra was blind and continued to hope to live comfortably in the midst of all kinds of reverses of life. A sadhu like Vidura is meant to awaken such blind persons and thus help them go back to Godhead, where life is eternal. we can just imagine how responsible a task is entrusted to a sadhu like Mahatma Vidura. Some persons in the mode of goodness, they try to help other people, feed people, cure people's diseases. Rescue people from some terrible calamity. Bring them to safety on the waiting in JFK Airport to come here to Singapore, and they have these very large TV monitors with CNN, and so loud you can't. So just hearing the description, one young boy and his friends, they were playing in the Los Angeles River, and the river swept the boy away, and he fortunately got stuck somewhere. There was a bridge, and there were some things he caught hold of these structures that were supporting the bridge, and the firemen went down with a rope and grabbed a hold of the boy and brought him back to safety. So he saved his life. And he was thanking God, and his mother was thanking God. But are his problems of life solved? He's thankful that he has his life. The sadhu's task is saving people's eternal lives. It's not just the child that's rushed away by the strong waves of the river, or the person who's caught in a blazing fire, and it takes heroism to do those things, rescue those people or save people from their medical difficulties. That's noble. But to save those persons from birth and death, that's the mission of a sadhu. And everybody needs that one. So now he starts with text 24. He's moving towards the alternative. There's no need to live a degraded life, subsisting on the charity of those whom you tried to kill. There is an option. Oops, there's one more. Despite your unwillingness to die, and your desire to live even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old garment. And it was happening before his own eyes. Time and tide wait for no man. It's such an interesting way Prabhupada puts this. The time energy works, although it's taking the life of a devotee, it works in favor of the devotee. That is, with each day that passes, the devotee is that much closer to their eternal position by the grace of Krishna. And for the materialist, each day that passes, it's taking away some part of what they have accumulated, or think that they have accumulated, their wealth, their vitality, their health, their family, and they're that much closer to that all being taken away. So time energy is working in two different ways, just as the internal energy and the external energy of the Lord act. differently upon the devotee and the non-devotee. Situations of life provide us with opportunities for service, for the service-minded person. Service to Krishna opportunity. The occupation is an opportunity to render some service through the gifts that Krishna has given. Family is an opportunity to serve other devotees of the Lord as an arrangement that Krishna has given to us. Having friends, having whatever it is that we have. Just it's an opportunity to dedicate those things to Krishna's service. And on the other side of life, I don't require material body and all these duties, unless Krishna so desires. My service to Krishna will go on without check. Therefore, I don't have to fear death. A very wonderful example of this that's presently going on in a newer and more exciting dimensions is Bhakti Tirtha Swami's preparing to leave his body with melanoma cancer. Any of you been receiving those things that I'm forwarding about what he's writing? Is anybody receiving that here? Should be sending, because it's a great drama. He's completely transcendental. Completely transcendental. He's a hero. He's in the jaws of the notice of death. One of his legs, he's known for being just, he would, during kirtan, during Mangal Arati, he's like calisthenics. He just dance and dance and dance and dance. Up and down and all around, and Rathiatras, forget it. Dance and dance and festivals and dance and dance. And now he's, one of his legs is cut off because the cancer was in his foot, and now it's spread to his lymph nodes, and it's just a matter of time. It's a very virulent kind of cancer. And every step of the way is not fear, it's just, if I'm ready, whatever Prabhupada and Krishna want. If they want to take me to some other situation of service, I'm ready. And he means it. It's just, you know, it's not like, oh, that's high sounding. But, you know, there's some other part of consciousness in him. There's no other part of consciousness in him. It's really amazing. I'll forward some of those. You can circulate them. It's a great lesson. It's not just a, you know, Bhagavatam story of some great grandfather Bhishma who voluntarily is getting ready to give up his body. It's like that. It's in contemporary life with somebody that was just an everyday somebody, a college student at Princeton University, and met the devotees and read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and dedicated his life to his mission. And now notice is given. Quickly, this body is going to deteriorate. And he's fearless. In fact, he has a great sense of humor about the whole thing. He's saying that, you know, life is always, the notices are always there. And now, here it is, the real story. Okay, so, see some discussion on this? Because of the time, I'm going to have to end here. Yeah.
Tears of this would be the Paramatma feature is also considered as Kala.
It's the controller of the material energy. Paramatma controls the material energy. Maya Jakshina Prakriti. And then there are energies through which the Supreme Lord does what he does, the time energy being one of them. As the time energy is cast by the glance or carried by the glance of Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu and Paramatma, they're the same entity, just differently situated. Time energy is the energy of the Lord, through which his adyaksha is acting. There, we have different names for them, but there is one entity. Just like each Paramatma that's expanded, it's one. And Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands to Shirodakshay Vishnu. It's one entity, differently situated. Although there's three Purusha avatars, it's one entity. Speak more clearly. You're louder and more clearly. Your voice tails off at the end of the sentence and I lose what you're saying. I'm sure it's very interesting, but I can't hear it. When your voice tails off, I'll go like that. Yes, Vidura issued very strong statements. He was in the position to do that.
So why does a neophyte issue such strong statements to his parents?
Why would a neophyte do like that? Because they're neophytes. They don't know better. They shouldn't. Okay? You don't, part of from Bhagavad Gita, it's part of austerity of speech that you don't instruct persons unless the proper relationship is there to do so. And aside from that, in addition to that, Dhritarashtra was a noble person by the evidenced by what he finally does and the extent of attainment that he reaches. He's like a great yogi. He's not an ordinary fellow. And Vidura knows that. He knows his audience. I pause because I'm thinking of some examples of either family members or families where they have someone that just chooses to not get it. And I choose to not speak like this to those people, but to speak of a child to their parents. Because they would just resent it. There's no background for them to move with, even if they got it. They couldn't go forward. Some preliminary things are needed. Just sent out a little notice of Shivaram Maharaj's brother is a very famous, I never knew this before, but is a very famous movie producer in Toronto. And so there was some newspaper article where Shivaram Maharaj has been requesting his famous brother to come with him to India, visit Vrindavan, Mayapur, Jagannath Puri. So his brother has agreed to do that. The author of the article has a good sense of humor. But one of the things necessary that Shivaram Maharaj has been doing is he's just been very patient and inviting his brother to come out of his environment to come to a spiritual environment. Then the opportunity of some realization may take place. It's one of the things that Vidura is inviting. Leave this environment. Go. I'm contemplating now how maybe there's something I can do to help my family members beyond just being a devotee and being a person who they don't understand but appreciate somehow. You give them a transcendental message, it's just, you know, from the interview of Shivaram's brothers, although they have a very close relationship, he doesn't understand anything that his brother is doing. It's the way of material life. Anything else?
Thank you.
Well, the method of getting in a plane and flying so many hours, Prabhupada managed to do it for a long time. But Prabhupada was like a Superman. Prabhupada started when he was 70. And he kept such a pace that his 20, 25-year-old athletic young Western disciples couldn't keep up with him. They had to take on a rotation just to... One elder Gujarati sannyasi named Mahavishnu Goswami. And he was describing to me that his age is now 80 or something like that, and you know, he would just laugh and say, same symptoms as Dhritarashtra. Coughing up mucus, teeth falling out, liver not working, same things. The notice is there. But my body is much more requiring rest than when I was younger. And I don't know how long it will last. So I've less traveling because just, you know, minimum stay in each place for a week to 10 days, minimum. Just what Prabhupada did was superhuman, literally. That spiritual energy that enabled him to do what he did was the same spiritual energy that delivered so many people so quickly to such conviction and such standards of Krishna conscious practice. So the program of bringing this message and speaking it strongly and boldly, and you're taking just it's a resource that isn't going to be forever there. And what that means is that the children have to grow up and take that service over. Take the responsibility. Take one's life in hand and begin also taking care of the lives of others. But that's not going to happen until one has that oneself. A father likes to see that his children, sons and daughters, become successful. Then, vicariously, he can enjoy. And the sadhu becomes similarly satisfied when the persons who receive the message actually receive the message, and their lives take another shape. Doesn't mean take another shape, doesn't mean the material renunciation, but the spiritual attachment to Krishna becomes formed. And with that, so the application part is will be the full expression of gratitude. and notice is being given that the resources you have at hand are very significant and they're not going to be around forever. So don't think, oh, this is very nice, but I'll get serious about this later. There's not likely to be, there may be, but it's not, there's certainly no certainty that the set of resources that you have available now are going to be much better later on. I think you have a great set of resources presently. Take advantage of them now so that you can be prepared for the next set of responsibilities in life and carry on with firmness and progressively preparing yourself for going back to Godhead. This is what's wanted. The message that Prabhupada so carefully sacrificed was for that purpose, was so that others could be delivered, just like Vidura, so that others can be delivered from the clutches of illusion and progressively make their way back to Godhead. And that's not a message of I'll do it later. It takes sustained effort, very seriously applied sustained effort to move from the material conditioning into the realm of spiritual awareness, and then continuing to go further and further. It's life's challenge. That gets its exams as you go along in life. You know, like going back to the office tomorrow. And the next time there's some disagreement amongst one of you and all those things. The application part, continuing to progress. The message is not just for Dhritarashtra, old people that are, you know, about just at the tail end of their life. This is for those people. It's for everybody. Okay, so I'll see you again soon. After, on my way back. Continue. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki